recorded live.
Good evening, everybody. How are you doing? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show for Married Men and for All Men. Presented to you from your www.householdstress.com team. We continue to bring you not only the hottest topics, but topics that in the long run will change your marriages for the better. Because, gentlemen, we are here to do the right thing, and that is improve and strengthen our marriage and all our love for our family. As always, gentlemen, we have only a few rules. No cursing, respect other comments, and it's okay to disagree, agree to disagree. Listen, we got an earth-shaking show for you tonight. Earth-shaking, yes, that's right, I said it. First annual aftermath, you get ready to get the real aftershock tonight. You know, I know that we had an earthquake in this area of on the East Coast. And that was just a little small portion of what we're going to be talking about tonight. We got a good one topic for you tonight. It is a difficult topic, and it's not a very exciting topic. If you saw the topic, it's not very exciting. It's even harder because we missed our show last week, and we do apologize. It wasn't anything that we can do about it, but Talk Show was down. But it's hard to follow 2 weeks ago's topic, Viagra. That was just, that topic was just off the chain. So, you know, when you got to think of these topics, and now you got to come back after a strong right hook of Viagra. That's kind of hard to do. But this topic this evening combines all of our prior topics, including Viagra. You know, in last week's topic, into one thing and really one powerful word, and that is power. Our topic tonight is the power of a loving man. Gentlemen, do you know how powerful manhood is? And do you think that you fit the profile of a powerful man? Does your wife, God, society respect you truthfully as a man? Or is it that something that it has to be considered continuous earning? You got to earn your respect. That's what we're going to find out tonight. Is your wife your best friend? That's one of the shows we had in the past. Is she a follower or is she the leader of your family when it comes to making final decisions in your household? Is she the backbone of the family or the face? That's a powerful statement there. I don't know if y'all caught that one.
You got to say that one again.
I got to say that one again. You want me to say it again?
Yeah.
Man, is your wife the backbone of the family or the face? We need to find these out tonight. Mm-hmm. Are you or have you abandoned your family and ran away from your problems? I don't want to take all of the time by talking. So my first discussion question to the group is, when did you know that your woman, your wife, was the one, the right one for you?
Well, I knew about 3 weeks after I met her in college. She was the one. And, you know, it was a moment where I wasn't really checking her out the first 3 weeks. Because we were in like a college program or whatever, and I wasn't, you know, checking out like that. I mean, she was cute and all, you know, no doubt. But it was a moment where she got up from the table. Like, we were playing cards or just hanging out in the lounge or something. And, you know, she always wore hair in a ponytail. And, you know, I think, I don't even remember if I asked. I think I might have asked her to, you know, take her hair out. I want to see her hair or something. And, you know, she took it out, you know, the ponytail. And, you know, it's almost like the movies, you know, where she shook her head. And then I'm just envisioning, like, fireworks going off behind her. You know, and that was the moment. You know, that was the moment. I was like, wow, I'm going to have to start talking to this chick a little more, you know, because, like I said, I mean, before that, you know, I thought she was attractive, you know, but I didn't really, you know, try to talk to her like that. And she had, you know, she had a boyfriend or whatever. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know. But, you know, as I said, that moment, you know, when I think I asked her to, you know, take her hair out, and, you know, sure enough. And then after she did, she put it right back in the ponytail and she left the room. But I got, you know, my little fireworks or whatever at that moment. So, and the rest, as they say, is history. 16 years later, you know, we dated all four years in college and been married 12. Two beautiful girls, and the rest, as they say, is history.
It's history. So when, now I'm gonna get direct with you. I'm just gonna be straight up and be direct with you, Rodney.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And so when did you go through your final checklist, if you had a checklist, and you said, you know what, this is gonna be my wife. It's time for me to make that next step.
And I didn't really have a checklist. But we just started hanging out, and she was cool, and she thought I was cool, and it just sort of just kept evolving, you know, little by little. And, you know, I was always the type that if I had a girl, you know, I'm not the cheating type or whatever, I just stuck with her or whatever. And so, you know, that wasn't an issue. So, I mean, you know, like I said, we just hung together, hung out, and as time progressed, you know, our relationship just started to develop and build. But to your question, I didn't have a checklist. Okay, she's passed this test. You know, we can move on. I can continue to date her or whatever. Oh, she's passed this test. I didn't really have that. It just sort of, you know, and we were young, you know. I met her when I was 17. And, you know, we were pretty much young. So, I mean, we sort of grew together, you know. And, you know, so to your question, you know, I didn't really have a checklist. Just sort of stuff just started happening, and I guess she passed whatever checklist I would have had, you know, because I stayed with her. So,
and the reason why I asked that question is because, I'm sorry, everybody has a checklist. You might not have thought it was a checklist.
I didn't have nothing written
down. But somewhere
down
in your checklist, you had the "Does she pass my mama test" checklist.
Yeah, you're right, and the mama test is on the checklist. You're absolutely right. If she don't pass that, she ain't, you know, I had a few that didn't pass the mama test and didn't work out right.
And it could be that you enjoyed the way she cooked, or she, you know, there was a situation where you was like, was there a situation that you said, you know what, I'm glad, I can't believe she did that, where she was right by your side when you were under pressure?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there. I wouldn't
to encourage you, or
yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say like a specific situation that I can recall, but I will say that she's very blunt. She says what's on her mind, and you know, a lot of times that can rub people the wrong way because she'll say what she's feeling, and she doesn't mean to be hurtful. But you know, I was a little worried, you know, with that, you know, taking her around moms, because, you know, when you're around, you know, your potential future mother-in-law, you sort of bite your tongue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not like that at all, and I was a little worried. I'm like, whoa, you know, and I like that about her, no doubt, but, you know, when I took her around moms, I'm like, you need to dial that stuff back a little bit, but she really didn't, and it was no issue with moms. My mom loves her to death. You know, so, I mean, you
but
gotta
that was
respect
one thing,
it.
Yeah, because one thing about my wife, she was blunt too.
Mm-hmm.
But that bluntness, this is probably the first time I'm putting this out there in the street.
Mm-hmm.
But that bluntness made me more humble, made me a better man.
Mm-hmm.
Because she called me out on my
on your stuff.
On my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Say that.
And that was one of the part of my checklist. Is the reason why I like my wife now. Is even to this day, if she don't think I'm doing something, she'll call me out on it.
Yeah, and you know, if you go to her, she's gonna give you the truth.
That's it.
You know, and she's not gonna mince words. And whereas a lot of other people you go to, and they, you know, they might not want to hurt your feelings or whatever, and they won't give you, they don't give you the real deal.
Because does it make you a more powerful man if you have a yes wife or a blunt wife, somebody who's gonna question some of your judgment? This goes out to anybody out there.
Say that again.
The question is, does it make you a stronger or more powerful man if you just had a yes wife that said yes to everything, or a wife that will check you, you know, be blunt and call you out every once in a while?
I think it would make you a stronger man if you have the wife that calls you out, other than the yes. Because the yes, with no friction, no resistance, doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because I've had the yes women in the past, and the relationship never went anywhere. Because I had all the freedom I want, because I can be like, all right, I'll be in the morning, okay.
You know? Whereas your wife be like, no, you ain't. You know?
I mean, just simple stuff like that. Even as before we got married,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was a boundary that was understood and couldn't cross. Even when we were courting, and that respected me more with my wife than it would with somebody who would just be a yes person, because I can just get away with anything. And I did. You know, it was the ones that you sleep on with their friends and they don't say anything. Hey, I'm sorry. It's all you had to say, and you kept it moving.
Wow.
And I'm just being honest. So that's I don't know if people realize that the more that you get involved into a person, the stronger they make you as a man. Do you believe you have all the power as a man at the beginning, that it's instilled in you and your wife has nothing to do with it?
No. I mean, I think one thing, like I think you said before, it has to be earned, you know, and you have to earn that power, you know, the full. It's not just given over to you like, you know, you got it all. I mean, you have to earn it little by little. So, you know, and over time, you know, we're still earning a little, you know, more, you know, power, as you say, as the relationship continues to progress. But you don't get it all up front. Absolutely not. I mean, unless she's a yes woman, you know, then you can get it all. But, I mean,
yes.
She's marriage material. You're not going to get it all up front. You got to earn it.
Oh, yeah. Well, because that's one thing. Because one thing I want to do is talk about is that one strong word, power. And that power word, I had to go and look it up. I had to pull Rodney, go to the dictionary, and
yeah,
look up the definition. Because to me, power can be anything. It's strength, right? You know, you got the power, or if you have the upper hand. So I wanted to go and find out what this definition is. And then looking at it, man, I said there is 32 different definitions for power in the dictionary. 32. But I'm just going to tell you a few of them. The ability to do or act. The capability of doing or accomplishing something. That's a powerful thing for a man. Great or marked ability to do or act, strength, might, force. The possession of control or command over others. Authority, the power over men's mind. And with that, the power over men's mind, that is one powerful thing. To give power to, make powerful. An outstanding quarterback powered the team in an upset victory. To inspire, spur, substance. To drive, to push by applying power. And the reason why I'm bringing all these up is we're going to talk about all of these type of definitions tonight, is that as men, we don't understand how much power we have. If we got 32 definitions of power, how much power do we as men really have in building a strong relationship with our wife and our family? And that's why I asked Rodney, I asked you the question to what were your expectations of the one? Did you have expectations before you saw your wife as, this is what I'm looking for in the one? Because I'm assuming what those expectations were probably false.
Initially, I expected her to be able to cook, and that was not her specialty at 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I saw she had the potential, and she worked at it. You know, she wasn't, you know, one of those where she was like, oh, I can't. You know, she messed some stuff up, you know, initially. And but over time, she just kept, you know, plugging away and got better and better at it. And she's a great cook, you know, great cook now. But I saw, again, you know, yeah, I mean, it was at one point, it was false expectation to expect her to be able to, you know, to cook and all that stuff. But at the same token, that's what I was looking for. And she eventually, you know, got to that level. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. What do you think, T-Hawk?
Well, when you say expectations, right, is it what we were shown, something that we saw in them during the courting stage that led us to believe that we would expect certain things from them, or just things that we expect from someone that would be our potential wife?
I think at some point it was, and like I said, in my situation with the whole cooking thing, it was something there where I saw that, yes, the first meal that she made.
Hello?
Was, yeah.
Yeah, you're back.
Hold on. The first meal that she made was peas and rice. And I was like, what is this? You know, peas and rice. And I was like, whoa. And I mean, you've had peas, you've had rice, you put them together and it's not the greatest meal. But again, you know, back to your point, T-Hawk, is that she kept plugging. She didn't say, oh, I can't do this. You know, all I can make is peas and rice. She kept trying different stuff. And over time, you know, the stuff got a little bit better, a little bit better. She was like, well, let me try this on, you know. I mean, but she just kept working on it. So to your question, that, yeah, it was shown, you know, a little inkling of the potential was shown. And that's why it lived up to my expectations. I'm like, no, you can't be a full, you know, chef or whatever, you know, cook for the whole family at this point. But I saw her as being able to do that, and I've been proven right, you know, down the line.
Hey, well, I'm glad you did it, because my wife almost didn't make the cut because she just couldn't cook water. And I was on my checklist, like, you know, I won't eat. But because I knew how to cook, it wasn't high on my checklist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There were some other things that I saw that it really impressed me. That bumped the other things down. So it was like, well, she can't cook, all right, but, you know, she can clean like a champ.
And that is a plus.
Mm-hmm.
That is a plus.
She was doing great in her grade, so she was, we met in college, so it was like, okay, I see she's responsible.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But there were some other things, but then you had the lust factor that took over some things, and I've forgotten. But in that, I looked past some things.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, as being, like you said, young at the age that we were, we never looked at the full picture, did we? As men, do we look at the full picture when we're looking for our actual, the one?
Absolutely. You say you did. And reality is, you said that, you know, cooking wasn't that high of a priority on your list. It was more on mine because I can cook, you know, so I don't starve myself. But I prefer not. I prefer to have my wife cook for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can cook, you know, if it came down to it, I can make my kids some, you know, and healthy and make myself some, but I don't prefer to do it. And, you know, but I think, like you said, you already had your priorities, you know, in line in your list, and you moved some stuff around because you said, oh, well, she's responsible, she's studious, you know, and all of those things, I'm sure, you know, were borne out in your 13-year marriage, you know, down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I think you do look at the whole picture because if you were just saying, well, this woman can't cook, I'm walking, you know, that you would, I mean, y'all wouldn't be married today if you thought just like if you were just on a one-track mind, you know, as far as, oh, she can't clean, well, I, you know, I can't marry her, you know, other things that go into the whole mix of it.
Yeah, you're right. So, quick question for everybody. Just a small, quick question. What do men want in a relationship? Be honest. What do you want in a relationship?
I think we want companionship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody on this earth wants to be loved. I mean, that's just the greatest thing, right, to have someone else love you. And it's different when you have children. I'm not talking about that kind of love. I'm talking about, you know, just having a relationship, have a woman love you. I mean, that's like deep stuff, you know, with
mm-hmm.
all of our stuff and all of our iniquities and everything, you know, and for someone to still love us in spite of. I think, you know, that's the bottom line, what we want. And that includes, you know, some good sex, some good food, you know, just hanging out, just someone to be able to talk to, you know, about anything and everything. But, I mean, it boils down to men want companionship, period.
I agree, because what women think men want from them causes them to have resentment, I believe. And anger towards men sometimes. And that's why men are from, what is it, Mars, and women's is from Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they feel hopeless about whatever development that is warming, that is romantic, and what is really needed in a partnership. What men think women want from them causes them much of the same feelings, I think. So this is what I thought. Here's a couple of mine that I thought what men want in a relationship that I thought of. I think men, number one, want honesty, timely, and loving communication. Do we agree? Is that number one on it?
Yeah, we don't want honesty in communication all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, some stuff, you know, going back to the bluntness, some stuff, might hurt your ego if she tell you, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but honesty is the best policy. That's that blunt that you were talking about earlier. I mean, you don't want that yes girl. You want that girl who's going to be blunt with, even if it pisses you off.
Yeah.
You know, you still keep that in the back of your mind. And I got the timely from you, Rodney, because I remember you saying a couple calls ago, years and years back from 2009 to about early 2011, is that timely is your most important aspect of your marriage. When you did the book, the five love letters,
five love languages. Yeah,
yeah, the five love languages. You said time was very, very important. That was on the top of your list.
Yeah, it is. It still is. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. if you don't get the time, man, if you don't, and, you know, we've gone back and forth about scheduling it. Folks may disagree with that. But if you don't, yeah, I know in my house, if you don't schedule it, it don't get done. And I
mm-hmm.
know that, you know, we're reading another book right now that we put down. We usually, our relationship is better when school is not in session. That's because my wife's mind is free. You know, she's not thinking of, curriculums and grading papers and standardized testing and calling a parent back, you know, and all this other stuff. So we usually put it down during the summer, and we try to pick it back up, you know, just read something together during the course of the school year, because, you know, time just goes by like that, and you look up, and a week has gone by, a month has gone by, and you really haven't, you know, spent that time, you know, with your wife. And another thing is the, you know, if there's an issue, you know, the communication has to be timely, that you don't bring up, you know, an issue at an inopportune time, because that's just going to make it, you know, so much worse. So.
Right, because here's my thought, and I'm just be honest with you. I don't like the mind reading. Like, you're supposed to know what's wrong with her or what they think. Like, you're supposed to already know without them saying anything. I don't know if anybody's ever run into that. But that's what drives me crazy. You know, if you can get that woman that is honest and perhaps even volunteering information and really saying what they want and need and not expecting you to know that this is what they want or this is what the problem is. You know, you ever been in that when you walk in the house and you say, what's wrong with you? Oh, nothing. When you know it's something wrong and you're like, come on now, just say it. You want to talk? Let's talk about it. What's wrong? Nothing. You should already know what's wrong with me. I don't know if anybody's ever had that. Maybe it's just me.
That's.
But, you know, I'm just saying, you know, that's why that's number one on my list. It's because
it ain't just you.
Because that's what will make a man want to fight, is just be like, why can't you just say what's on your mind? You know, any other time you're blunt, but then when it's time to talk that love and communication, and I can't get anything out of it. But two, I want to move on right quick. Number two, now let anybody want to expand on that? That communication?
I think that when you ask the question what we want out of a marriage or a relationship, I think that that is definitely one of the things that's key. We want to be able to understand what they're talking about. And I think a lot of times we don't. And they think that we're supposed to because it makes sense to them. You see what I'm saying? But a lot of times it doesn't make sense to us.
No.
Go ahead.
And you know, sometimes we it's like a dog chasing its tail, because you don't really know, you know, the
am
right.
Am I washing dishes or something?
Yeah, that's me. Sorry. I'm getting away from the kitchen.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, T-Hawk. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so a lot of times we end up saying the wrong thing, you know, for lack of knowledge of what they're talking about.
Yeah, and you know why that is? It's because when they do have, you know, something on their mind, and, you know, you ask them what's wrong, and they said, no, you know, it's nothing. It's because as men, if they were to tell us, we try to fix it. You know, so if they got an issue with a coworker, you know, if they tell us that, we're just like, we go into fixing mode, and we're like, okay, this is what you do with her. You tell her this, or you send her an email, or whatever the case may be, whereas women just want somebody to listen to them on a lot of occasions when they have that issue. And they may just need to just get it off of their chest, just voice it, put it out in the atmosphere for them to feel better without coming to a resolution or a solution. Whereas us, it's like, okay, there's a problem. Let's try to get to a solution. Whereas they just are comfortable with talking about the problem, you know, and not necessarily driving towards a solution. That's why they're hesitant to say, this is what's on my mind. You know, my coworker, the lady at the job, she's on my nerve, or whatever the case may be. You know, that's why they're, you know, hesitant and reluctant to share the information, because automatically we go into fixing mode. Like, do I need to talk to her? Do I need to call your boss? Tell him, you know. And that's not, a lot of times, that's not what they want. So a lot of times they just want to listen and hear.
Right. So what you're saying is that sometimes we have so much power, we abuse it, and we got to know how to balance out that power.
Yeah. And it's hard to listen. It's hard to just sit there and listen to that stuff. I mean, I don't know if it's just me or what, but I mean, it's really hard when you finally pull it out of her, you finally, you know, get her to say what's on her mind, and really, you can see as soon as you interject something, it just sort of goes down a road that you're like, how did we get here? Because
back to what I said earlier about the volunteering information. Why can't they just say, listen, I want you to listen. I don't want you to fix it. I just need you just to listen.
And that's a great point. You know, I don't know why they don't. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. You need to ask your wife. How come she doesn't? Let me know. Because, I mean, you're right. If they were just to say, if you would say, you know, what's wrong, honey? And if they were just to come out and say, you know what? I'm going to tell you what's wrong, but I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to listen. I mean, that would help us. We'll still try to fix it because that's what we are with men. But, you know, that would help, you know, sort of, you know, put us in more of a listening mode. I don't know. But that's my opinion. I don't know if anybody agree or disagree with that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So your tip to women who listen to this call after the night and when they read it in the book, it would be great men want and need straightforwardness. Courageous communication without anger and criticism, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but that's impossible.
But that's what we want. The whole point of this call about women finding out the power of a loving man is this is what we want. So number two, here you go. Men want self-sufficient, secure, and a confident woman. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Not too self-sufficient. Go ahead, T-Hawk.
Well, no, you're right. You're right. Not too self-sufficient, but you definitely want self-sufficient women.
Yeah, because if they too self-sufficient, then they don't need you. You know, they were like, I got this. I had this before you. I can have this after you or during you or after you. Don't matter. And that's not the right idea. That's not a wifely attitude to have. I'm sorry. You know, because it has to be some sort of dependency on the husband. I mean, that's just how it stack up. Yeah, you know, you can not like it, but that's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is. So you want something a little closer to you, you know, like you.
Yeah, because you can't be so independent. Like, I need my wife. I mean, I need my wife, and I think we talked about it on this thing, you know, before. If something were to happen, you know, I think it was death and marriage. If something were to happen to, you know, our wives, we'd be devastated. You know, we lost that companion. You know, we got to figure out something to cook every night, you know, something to eat or whatever. You got to, you know, some of us may need to start figuring out what clothes we're going to wear. I mean, it'll be devastating, you know, if we were to, you know, lose our wives. So, I mean, it's, you know, we need each other. We complement each other. But, I mean, it's, at some point, it's, you know, we have to depend on each other. And to your question, you can't, the woman can't be too self-sufficient. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's got to be some balance there, as we always say on here.
But you bring up a good point, and I want to bring this out. Men need to feel needed too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We need a little pat on our back. We need our woman to say, you know, good job.
Mm-hmm.
Great husband.
Yeah, stroke the ego.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you got a thank you from your wife?
I get them all the time, you know, because I'm the, you know, greatest, so, you know.
I ain't talking about the thank you for taking out the trash.
No, I'm serious. I get thank you all the time for, you know, various things, you know, and what happens is I thank her. You know, on the flip side, you know, I thank her. You know, she cooking or whatever and served a great meal. And I say, hey, this was great, honey. You know, thank you. You know, thank you for doing that with the kid. Whatever it is, I just say, hey, thank you. And I noticed that she's more communicative, you know, when it comes to that as well. She's more willing, you know, to say thank you for the little thing. Like you say, taking out the trash, you know, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, you give it, you get it back. It's like, you know, good karma, bad karma.
I agree. Men want a woman to choose them out of want rather than out of desperation, either materially or emotionally. Men need to be wanted and need to be, you know, they need to be with their partner.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything you're saying, but sometimes don't women want their partners to have a separate identity? I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that out there. Number three, men want a manipulation-free relationship.
Manipulation-free. That's interesting. But I think that goes back to T-Hawk's point. It's impossible.
Yeah, they don't want to read your mind,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and we'll, I mean,
interpret signals and everything, like you're supposed to know everything.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a little manipulation that goes on both sides, you know, and I think that goes along in every relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that you get her some flowers or whatever, okay, you might get lucky that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, hey, that's a little bit of manipulation, you know. I mean, that's just real talk.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think a little bit of manipulation, you know, goes. I'm not, you know, necessarily condoning it. I'm just saying it is what it is.
It goes a long way, but you don't want to be forced to move faster in a relationship than when you already are. You don't want to be forced to do something you don't want to do. Happens all the time.
Happens
you get forced
time.
To go places you might not want to go, or
mm.
you know. Hang out with people you might not want to hang out with, you know. There's things that we got to compromise on, I guess. You put that compromise word into a pretense.
Yeah, and I told y'all a couple of weeks ago how I went to, I scheduled a whole anniversary weekend was around stuff that my wife wanted to do. The whole shebang. You know, we went to a NASCAR race. She likes NASCAR, and we went to this book festival. Now, I don't want to do neither one of these things, but outside. I forced myself, you know, to just, and I just like hanging out with my wife. I don't know about anybody else, but I just like, that's the one person that, you know, especially without the kids around, you know, I just love hanging out with her. You know, so, I mean, I plan it, and I, you know, I could have, like, I didn't, like, if I didn't go, you know, the NASCAR race was kind of cool, but the book festival was kind of, I mean, it's, yeah, but, I mean, if I didn't go to either one of those events, you know, it wouldn't have been a big deal if I had missed out or whatever, but I saw that it made her happy, you know, and she appreciated it, and she knows that ain't, I mean, that's her thing. So she knows that I was making a sacrifice specifically for her, and you know, like I mean, you get it back, you know, like you said with the thank yous, and you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Man, good words. I got a few more, and then we're gonna get ready to the 10 o'clock hour. Get to the nitty gritty stuff.
The adult hour.
Men want growth. Personal responsibility and ownership. Men want a partner who can laugh at herself, who has the courage and the strength. They want women who can see her part in the relationship, dynamics, and own it. That's one thing I found that was great on my checklist about my wife, is that she owned it, you know. She saw her part in our relationship. Some of it was good, some of it probably was bad. But at the end of the day, with a few tweaks, just like a car, you know, it drives smooth for a while, and then you got to do some maintenance on it. It built growth in our relationship. We grew. We went through that hard time around 7th, 8th year of marriage where you really hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because your expectations of the past, as a man, you were trying to keep those same expectations where you were really holding your growth in your relationship with your wife. And that goes back to that power. Can we abuse our power by trying to do where we put our expectations above our relationship? When you have to end up saying it's all about me, this is what I want. Anybody? So I guess everybody thinks it's okay to just make sure that it's all about you and nothing about your wife. That's how we roll.
I guess so.
I guess that's just the way it is, because like Tony said, it's because I said so.
Right. But I think what you said earlier is a beautiful thing, since nobody else won't chime in on here. But it's a part of, like you said, I mean, you have a partnership. And that's just a beautiful thing, because a lot of women, and unfortunately a lot of guys, don't know, we don't know what roles we're supposed to play, and it's different in each relationship. You know, like we talked about, who handles the finances. I mean, that, you know, some people have say that the man should absolutely handle that. Others say no, you know, that's just a task, the woman can handle it, or whatever the case may be. But if you're working in tandem, you know, it all works together for the betterment of your relationship. And you have to find, you know, you have to find those roles that you have to play in your respective relationship, you know, for it to work. But it has to be a partnership. You know, y'all have to be, you know, striving for the same goals and you know, short-term, long-term. And you really have to have, you know, some direction as far as what you're going, because, you know, you can't be going in two different directions. You know, you have to be going in the same, you know, towards the same, trying to hit the same goals, you know.
Yeah, but now, you know, men are logical and women are emotional, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does the conflict come in when the woman is not emotionally stable? I'm just asking a question. I mean, in order for work, right, to say what you just said, to have growth, that personal responsibility for self, I think women have to be emotionally stable, and that's the hardest thing for a woman, is to be emotionally stable, because they bring, and we talked about this on calls before, is that sometimes our wives bring and keep that old dirty luggage from prior relationships into your relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, and we, you know, we laugh, but I mean that's a reality, and you know we talked about it, like you said, baggage in your marriage, is that we all bring baggage in, you know, both sides, but I mean this is it's especially difficult when, you know, maybe your wife didn't have a father figure in the home or whatever the case may be, that's gonna affect your marriage. Period. Some way, somehow, it's gonna affect your marriage. You know, or, you know, her past experiences with men, you know, in general. I mean, even though you're the one that she married and you were, you know, you surpassed all the dudes in the past, of course, but, you know, her interactions and the things that she dealt with in those previous experiences, I mean, that's going to affect your relationship one way or the other.
It will. It will.
You own it. Do you own that now? Let me tell you what I mean by that.
Okay.
I was talking to some brothers the other day, and we were talking about, you know, when you marry a woman, you marry everything, all her baggage, all her history, everything. And whatever happened in the past with other men that may pop up in your marriage, you know, stuff that creeps in, bad stuff, good stuff, whatever. But you kind of own it. You take ownership in something that you had nothing to do with, if you know what I mean. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Making perfect sense.
Making perfect sense.
I mean, you know, by default, now you own it. You know, and if it comes up and if it's an issue that she was dealing with, now it's kind of like, you know, you got to help resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if she's dealing with some abandonment issues or whatever, I mean, whatever it is that happened in her past, and it's find its way into your marriage, even when it may, you know, and maybe she's not dealing with abandonment issues with you. I'm just using that word, you know, as an example, but now,
oh, man.
Now it's yours.
Yeah, because you married her.
You married.
Listen, that's right, because I want you to just say that word again, abandonment, because it's going to come up about five more times in this conversation this evening.
Yeah.
And the one thing about it is that, to your question, sir, I mean, to your point, sir, I think that we do own the parental child relationship. Like, if it's something that went a little wrong in that area, regarding our wife, I think we're more willing to own that versus, I mean, we're not owning no stuff of the previous boyfriends. I mean, that's a little tough. I mean, that's a little tough because, I mean, the first thing we say is, like, I'm not him. You know, I ain't even, yeah, that dude ain't even close to me. That's why you married me. I mean, we get, you know, we get all big and bad. But, I mean, it's a, you know, to your point, that's a great question because I think it's easier. Not easy, but easier to own the parental issues, you know, that were there with the, you know, as the wife was growing up, but not the past boyfriend's issues. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. I mean, I hear you.
Uh-oh.
You know, I mean, I hear you, and I like it.
Yeah.
I like your answer. I really do, but. At some point, while we're trying to achieve this wife, achieve this relationship, the talk of what has happened in the past, things that maybe she didn't like the last guy did or whatever, and we say, well, you know, I will never treat you that way.
Right.
I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? Come on over to me, and I'm going to show you how it's supposed to be, how you're supposed to be treated.
And right, you know what she's going to say?
Right
she's
then and there, but hold on, right then and there, We took ownership of whatever he did that they didn't like. We took ownership to say, well, I'm going to show you something better. You see what I'm saying? And then, but we, 5-10 years later, it comes out, you know, this guy may have been abusive. He may have been verbally abusive. Whatever the case may be, we still have to take that same ownership and say, well, just like you said, it ain't me. But we still have to find a way to get her past it, I think.
Good words. I feel you, brother. That's good words.
And I agree with you, Tony. That's the power of loving a man, is we as men end up taking ownership of these luggages and all these past experiences in our wife, and we're protected of those. That's I was watching Bad Boys the other day, and I think it was Bad Boys 2 when they was in the store and they was in there and the cameras was on them. And Will Smith says, we're going to take all these little problems and we're going to put it in this box. We're going to take this box out and we're going to put it in the corner. And with that, we're going to protect that box by not even bringing it up, because it shouldn't be part of our relationship.
Yeah.
We're different people right now.
But, and you, and honestly, you know, you are, you've been driving down my street the whole night.
Oh, man, that's good.
You know what I'm saying? And you're still there, and you won't go away. But but how do you achieve that? And that's the thing that I want to make talk about. How do you achieve the put it in a box and leave it in a box? Because I think that's the ideal thing in a marriage or any relationship. When you take those bad times, that drama, you put it in a box and make an agreement never to go into that box again. But
and that's the hard part, because I don't know. I haven't achieved that goal myself.
Yeah, I haven't either. And I'm dealing with that right now. It's like certain things, you know, even with me, certain things I know I'm not supposed to bring up. You know what I'm saying? But then when backed into a corner, that's what you have, so you bring it up.
Yep.
Well, you know, you ain't supposed to bring it up, because when you forgive, and see, that's the whole forgiveness thing. When you forgive,
it's supposed to go away.
Yeah, it's supposed to. You're supposed to never even revisit it again.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you revisit it again, you didn't forgive. It was just words. And that's that box you're talking about. That box is what's going in that box could be something that you have supposed to have forgiven the person for.
That's right.
And when you go back in that box, you know, it's a contradiction. Okay.
It's that, see, and that affects us power as men, because if we're the owners of the box, we're the gatekeepers of this box, and we end up are the ones that keep going back into the box and pulling it up, because we're losing a battle. What do we gain? Because it might go back to what...
I don't agree with that. I don't agree that we would be the gatekeeper of that box, because that's putting too much pressure on us. That box contains things from both sides.
Yeah, but we have to be the gatekeeper of the box.
But you can't, but how can you be the gatekeeper of the box? That means that you can control the other owner of that box, and you can, and then you dictate whether they go back in that box or not. You can't stop them from going in that box, bringing up stuff.
Well, no, you can't stop them. But the whole point is, if you don't bring it up, then she won't bring it up.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
thing,
right.
And I'm gonna be honest with you, because I. This is what happened to me, my 8th year of marriage, where it almost separated us to that man in that black coat. And I'm just being honest, is that we kept going back and forth with each other in that box. Where it could be anything, where you did this, or you did this, or you did this. And we had to come to an agreement that from this day forward, I'm going to even wipe that out of my memory bank. That box is not going in a corner. It's going in that river back there.
It's going to flow
and
away,
and I'm just
going
to forget about it. The past is the past. What we're going to do is we're going to build our relationship off today. And from year 9 through 13, I could probably count on our hands how many fights we have had since that point where we stopped trying to break each other down and trying to, you know, take the lead and win in a fight.
Well, I think you said the magic word. You said we. It was mutual.
Yeah.
What if one party wants to keep their box in their bedroom?
Well,
like
I mean,
brother was saying, you know, you done threw it in the river, but she still got her box.
Well, and that's where the problem comes, and that's what we were talking about right here is, as men, that power of loving is you still got to love her, even with that box.
Mm.
After a while of annoying, you know, it's almost like a little kid. A kid, as long as you keep picking up the kid, little baby, when she crying, she going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start annoying them and not paying attention to that negativity goes away.
Yeah, because, you took away its power.
You took away its power. And so even though it will still happen every once in a while, you know how to handle it better.
Yeah, check it. She got a box in the bedroom, and she pulling out stuff, and you just, you know, she like, what about this? And you like, it's cool. It don't even faze you anymore. You done zapped the power when she got in her box. So it's just nothing but a bunch of empty stuff, you
mm-hmm.
know, stuff that don't hold no weight, no power anymore. Mm.
Right.
Mm. Hold on a second. I'm going to play quarterback. Patrice, I want you to play wide receiver because I'm getting ready to go deep.
Uh-oh.
All right.
Okay, now we talk about, and I'm getting ready to go way, way in left field.
Hail Mary, brother.
This is going to be a Hail Mary. We talk about being equally yoked every now and then on this call.
Yes.
And I think that once we make commitment to cross that line of salvation, I think one of the first lessons that we learn is forgiveness. Am I right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The first one that we learn is how to forgive. Because most people struggle with that. We struggle with the, you know, well, you wronged me, so it's over.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
like disrespectful. You being disrespected, I gotta cut you off.
And we finished. Don't mm-hmm. call me no more. Don't, you know, we don't get the forgiveness that we yearn for from the Lord. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into a situation with another person, and let's just say that you are in stage 6 of forgiveness, and they in stage 1. and now y'all both supposed to be equally protecting this box.
Wow.
Well, see, that box.
I'm saying. Did you catch the pass, or was it an interception? That's all I want.
It was an interception because that box it has to go to God.
Yeah,
when I say throw that box in the water,
when you have that
prayer, you got to pray to God. Say, God,
listen,
I can't keep taking this. You got to do something with this box.
I understand what you're saying. But people have their own speed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Some people going to get to level 6 quick. Some people going to take years to get to level 2. But y'all both equally responsible for protecting that box, keeping that box in that corner.
You still got to be responsible. You have no choice as a man. You gotta hold on.
Yeah, and I think that one thing about it is that you have to deal with what's in the box. You know, you have to know what's in there, and you have to, and what you talked about before, Ms. O, you have to be timely. Even though she's not timely, you know, you have to be timely. And maybe when you're having, you know, your up day, you go to the box on your up day, you know, and you pull some stuff out and say, hey, let's talk about this right here. You know, let's deal with it. Because you can't just throw it in the river and it not be dealt with. You can't do that. You have to deal with it, you know, and then it can be, you know, cast aside or whatever. But you can't just, you got to know what you got to know what's in the box, and you got to be strategic when you go in and you know, and you go pull some stuff out. You know, you can say, hey, I see you got this stuff in here. Let's talk about it. I'm ready. You ready? You know, it's got to be timely and tactful, as we say.
Okay. But then I think that goes against what the arrangement is. I think what is contained in the box, as he was using the movie analogy, it was the bad things that happened that shouldn't come up because they're destructive, non-productive things. You see what I'm saying? So once you put them in there, I don't really know if you want to deal with it. I think that the only way to deal with it is to put it in the box and shove it to the side. Now, you're right, it may be some unresolved issues in there.
Yeah.
But I think at the point of discussing this box, it's deemed unresolvable. I'm thinking.
What they say,
know.
Irreconcilable differences.
Exactly.
When you go
exactly.
To
exactly. It's like, okay, we can't ever visit this again because it's that bad.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the box.
You have to. You got to figure out a way to say, listen, I thought we said we weren't going to revisit this again. Why are we bringing it up?
Yeah.
And listen, I don't want to discuss it. Whatever the problem was, we said before in the past, we weren't going to revisit it, and that's in the story. Now, if we need
wait
to...
Wait a minute.
We got to pull the tone. It's in the story. I mean,
no.
That's the only way you're going to get rid of it, I believe.
No, wait a minute.
Or you got to go and find out what's really... Because something is still there that hasn't been found.
Resolved. Yeah, now you get into it. Because there's some stuff that, you got to get to, or you have to just say your piece. And it may be a point where you agree to disagree, you know, on the issue or whatever, but I think that, and y'all know it's times. Y'all know it's times where she's like, well, I don't want to talk. It's like, well, no, we got to go back, and I got to tell you how this affected me. You know, whether it changes anything, I just got to get this off my chest. And we feel better, you know, that she knows that this really affected me this way. You know, this made me feel this way, you know. And I think that, you know, it's nice, you know, to say, well, we can't talk. No, some stuff we need to pull it out and we need to express how it made us feel. Because then it's gonna come back up in other ways. That's all I'm saying. It's going to come back up, and then it's going to be thrown up in an argument. And it's like, wait a minute, where did that come from?
That's where it came from.
Yeah.
It came right out that box.
Once you've done that and you've expressed how it's made you feel, and let's just say the issue is one of those unresolvable issues, how many more times can it be thrown up at you?
At that point, it's done.
Yeah, it has to be done. You got to nip it in the bud somewhere.
Throw it up at you or vice versa.
Okay. Here's
you see what I'm saying? You know, we can say, well, you know, when you did this, this hurt me, and this and that, and for whatever reason, you guys haven't been able to resolve the issue because she feels one way, you feel another, and you've expressed how it makes you feel. How many more times can that be brought up? Or is that one of those, okay, we're not bringing this up again because you already expressed how it made you feel. I acknowledged that, but we can't come to a resolution on it.
Agree to disagree.
Correct. All I'm saying is some people continue to bring those things up, and that causes more and more angst because it's one of those, let's just call it, unsolvable issues because we see things very differently. I'm sorry I hurt you, but I still believe that this is how it should be, and you believe it shouldn't be, and we're not going to get to a resolution on it. But a lot of times people, you know, especially in moments of high-level discussion, pull that stuff out of the bag and throw that curveball back at you because they know it's a hot button. And what they really want to do is get other things off their chest and get you fired up so they know the buttons to push.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at some point, we are the final say. You know, I mean, at some point, if there's an, like you said, like we said, if there's an issue that we agree to disagree, you know, that's when it comes down to the head of household.
Well, we are the final say. Ooh,
yes.
Boy, that must go well with with your bride.
Let me explain. If there's an issue, and we talk about it, and what I'm saying is that with that final say, she has to yield to the final say. Now, you don't come out and say,
well,
it's final.
It's not final say, my brother.
It is, because it's some issues where you cannot, it's no agreement. And that's what I'm saying. There are issues in marriages that there, it's okay to agree to disagree. But at that point, the wife has to say, you know what, I don't agree with this decision, but you are the head of household. What is wrong with that?
I guess I'm just wondering how that I have the final say goes. I just think that wouldn't go real well.
Well, no, I'm not. Don't get stuck. Don't get caught up on the words I'm using.
Yeah, and
that's what I'm saying is that, just like I said, there are issues in marriages where the couple will not agree.
Correct.
And that's when the wife says, I don't agree with you on this, but you are the head of household. And that's what I mean by she's yielding to the head of household to make the final decision.
Now, in a picture perfect world, that makes sense.
Thank you.
We're living in the real.
But listen.
I said picture perfect world.
We don't live
in a picture perfect world.
No, we don't live in a picture perfect world.
I do.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, we would like that. I mean, that's right along the lines of because I said so.
It is.
Kind of like because I said so.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there.
I kind of like that.
And look, if you're already at because I said so, why bother with the conversation in the first place?
Did you patent that? I have yet to use that, but it's been in my mind.
Hey, listen.
I haven't used it because I thought you had a patent on it.
And I haven't. Listen, I haven't used it either. You use it and tell me how it works out for you.
You know, I'll tell you what really has worked for us. It's the contract.
Go back to the contract.
It's because both of us have agreed in writing, signed and dated, that this is how we agree to handle conflict. And that if one of us is violating that contract, we can pull it back out and say, wait a minute, this is what both of us agreed to protect our marriage. Okay? And you know, you're not honoring your word. We've come to that we can't agree on this, so this needs to be buried. Okay, and you have signed this, and I have signed this, and this is one of those times where our word has got to be stronger than this argument. Now, either you're going to honor your word or you're not.
Yeah.
And that's where the contract really, and we, you know, Glenn and I have had to do that a few times. Well, I shouldn't say that. Glenn has had to pull the contract out on me.
I love it.
I'll tell you the truth, man, because, I mean, you know, you ever had a real good mad worked up?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, one of those mads that you can't wait for them to walk in the house so you can let them have both barrels.
Yeah.
You know, and my wife walked in, and one of the rules on our contract is that if it's not a good time, you know, we got to take a step back, and if one of us, you know, calls that, we got to do it. And she called, and that wasn't working for me at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she pulled the contract out, and she said, I guess your words don't mean anything.
Wow.
Hey.
Wow.
This is good, fellas. This is a good conversation, and I think
that's all I can do, man. Because I was ate up with ignorance.
I can believe.
Y'all ever been at that point? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm talking stupid, man, ready to just blast it all because you know you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and then she gonna pull this on me? Oh, heck to the no.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to have a good session with the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I'm right, and we, you know, you already know, but I'm right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's my one of my downfalls is how I respond to situations like that. Instead of thinking about it and hearing it out and evaluating everything. I mean, just like you said, Andrew, sometimes people know the buttons to press.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that once they press those buttons, that's when we're really being tested on how we react.
And that's why it's so important to get up front that the marriage is more important than any issue. You know, that damage to the marriage is much more devastating than you know, get or venting, you know, and feeling good to let that vent off. You know, and sometimes, you know, if both of you are fighting for that, then, you know, somebody with a cooler head can say, wait a minute, you know, we're not damaging this marriage. And if we go forward at this point, we're going to damage this marriage because you're going to say things that's going to piss me off, and I'm going to tell you just how it is. And I don't care how much you say later, oh, I'm sorry. Once it's out there, it is out there.
Yeah.
There it is.
Pull that stuff back. It's best to bite your lip and punch yourself in the head than to lay some of that stuff out there that we want to lay out sometimes.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying earlier. Sometimes you gotta use your power is sometimes to be silent.
That's it.
And sometimes your power has to be silent because once you open that box, it's on.
That's
that
it.
Box, it's going to take a longer time to close, to get everything back in the box again and give it to God because you took it away from him once you put it in that box and gave it to him. Because,
you know, some of those things, they can't go back in the box.
Yeah.
Some of those things, when we get real mad and, we, you know, they hurt us and we want to hurt them back because we know how to do it, you can't put some of those things back in the box. So you got to be real careful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those things you just need to just shut up, and that's when we have got to tap on the strength and say, Lord, you need to talk to your daughter because if I open my mouth, it is all over.
Wow,
it is.
And I'll tell you, if you have one of those women that chase you down when you're trying to walk away, I'm glad I don't. But I've seen some women. Dude's trying to walk away, and she's chasing him all over. I don't know how you deal with that.
You keep walking.
Yeah, no, man, I guess.
She keep chasing.
I mean, the thing is that they're trying to provoke you. They're trying to get you to lose that power. Because it's almost like osmosis. If you take the negativity off of them and they give it to you, and next thing you know, the police putting you in handcuffs.
Yeah, I understand that, man, but that's an easier said than done deal.
But that's
the women get straight up ghetto on a dude, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because she'll say, why are you walking away? You ain't a man. You ain't walking away. Why are you walking away? They'll try to do anything, but a real man is a man who walks away.
I understand that. I'm just saying that. I'm glad,
you know,
I'm not deal with that, but I've seen some dudes where the woman's up in his face just. That's a tough deal, man. And I guess that's just your cross you got to bear.
Yeah, yeah. It's 10:30, fellas, and I still haven't got through half of what I want to talk about. We still on what men want in a relationship, and I just want to. Is it okay if we just move a little forward, or do y'all want to keep talking about this?
Yeah,
Tony's on you.
Yeah, I got something to say.
Right.
Regarding Andrew's comment, because he makes a good point. And, you know, your topic tonight is the power of a loving man. But what about the power of a loving wife?
Mm.
I mean, I know it's 10:30. You know, we get a little deep, you know, around this time.
But you done got deep. I mean, let's keep it going.
You know, and the thing about it is that, you know, the brother said, he was like, I don't have to deal with that. I don't have to deal with, you know, if I walk away, you know, she knows I need time, you know, to cool off or whatever, run around the block or whatever it is that he does. But she's not chasing him down. She's like, you know, I'm going to just let him, you know, do his thing and then we'll come back. and it'll be a better conversation than if she's, you know, where are you going? You know, walking, following you out the house, and it's just like, well, you don't want to talk to me? You know, calling your names and that kind of stuff. I mean, let's talk about the power of a loving wife, you know, how that, in turn, gives us power.
It really does, because I'm going to tell you what, my wife does not engage, you know, and she really does. She her love and forgiveness really has brought me to a higher level than I'd ever been at. And I see her sometimes, you know, and she I'm amazed, because I tell somebody, I ain't been saved that long. I still want to bust my foot up in somebody. and she has a forgiveness that is hard for me to grasp sometimes, you know, because, you know, the closer somebody is to you, the more they can hurt you.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, the guy from another city you never met, he can't hurt you but so much. What you going to say? I'm talking about the closest people to you, you know, your mother, your father, your sister, your cousins, you know. People you thought you could count on, and when they stab you, you know.
But Andrew, that's what T-Hawk said earlier about, you know, you can have a couple where one, they're at stage six of forgiveness, and the other one is at stage one, and don't look like they're moving out of stage one anytime soon. And how do you deal with that?
But hold on, now there has to be a reason why you're at stage six. If you both started at one and you are now at six, and your wife is at one.
No.
You done did something.
Nobody said you both started at one.
Right.
Oh.
That's right.
Chances are both people never started the same place.
Exactly.
Right. That's right.
Because the baggage that we come in with is different.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, I grew up in New York. Like Tony's going to relate to this.
Yeah.
Man, somebody hits you, you hit them harder.
Yeah, there's no such thing as forgiveness in New York.
That's right, because you can't
exist,
be punked. All right, you just can't be punked. Okay, my favorite line was, I ain't no punk B. You hit me, you gonna know not to hit somebody, not to hit me.
Yeah, it's on.
Not to hurt me. Is that how you grew up, Tony?
On like old Redenbacher popcorn.
See somebody with forgiveness when somebody does that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't come to Christ till I was 40 years old. Okay, and I'm telling you, cross me, you know, it's on.
Now, Andrew, take that mentality to somebody who now in present day time may cut you in line at the movies,
right?
And not even apologize, just punk you. And for you to say, I'm just saying, because I mean, you know.
I still got to deal with some of that.
You know what I'm saying? And for you.
Because it rises up in me, Tony.
But you still don't act the same way you did then.
No, I don't.
Now you think about biting your tongue.
I'm like, you know, it's not worth it. It's not that big a deal.
It's not that big a deal. There you go.
Okay. I think about it, and I look at this, you know, or the guy that cuts me out, you know, and I go, it's not that big a deal. Okay? But it's still down in me. Okay? I still feel that. That's what I mean. I say I ain't been saved that long. Okay? Because that still rises up, you know, and I got to put it in check. I got to go, it's not that big a deal. In the big scheme of things, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
So I haven't got to the level where stuff doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had some situations that I've had to deal with where, like I said, I mean, I've had some people that, you know, have hurt my family, and it's a hard one for me just to swallow and say, okay, Lord, forgive them. I'm like, let me beat them down, and you can forgive them.
Forgive them for they don't know what they did.
For forgiveness than permission. Lord, can I kick their butt? No. Oh, okay. Lord, I beat his butt. Forgive me. All right. You see, it's easy to ask for forgiveness than permission.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that power component is all over that.
That's right. And that's why, you know, that's what true meekness is.
Yeah.
You see, Christ wasn't weak, he was meek.
Yeah.
So he had strength under control. And that's what we as Christian men have to be called to. I mean, it wouldn't be hard to go off and beat somebody down.
Right.
Okay, especially if they deserved it, and some of these suckers deserve it.
For sure.
Okay, but to bridle that strength is real strength.
Yeah.
To bridle that strength is real manhood. Okay, I mean, fellas, I mean, you know you can't have a fight with your wife. I'm talking about physically.
No.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
When I married my wife, she would tell me because she was in an abusive relationship before, and she would tell me that she and her ex-husband would fight. I said, sweetie, that's not a fight. I said, me and you can't have a fight. Oh, yeah, I get my licks. I said, no, honey, we can't have a fight. I'm 240 pounds. This is not a fight. It's two hits. I hit you, you hit the ground. It's a fight. Okay, that's not a fight. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I mean, what does that prove? You know what I mean? I mean, that's nothing.
That just proves that you your wife beat him.
That just proves you're a punk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the way I see it. You know what I mean? And you know. So either one or two things. Either you don't know how to control your temper, or you are just a control freak and you want to have this woman under your control.
Yeah.
Good words. Abuse of power.
Abuse of power. But I wanted to... I got two more. I'm going to run through them real quick, but then I want to move on. Man want... fidelity and a commitment to the relationship. And men want women who know how men need to be treated. Those are the ones I had that we talked about tonight. But Tom brought up a word that I wanted to bring up. And I want to say a problem with some men in power, and I want to put this on record, that I feel that they disrespect women is when they abandon their family.
Mm.
Abandonment. That word abandonment is a powerful word. Now, sometimes men move away because of just what we just talked about. That negativity, we can't get past the fighting, we can't get past that Pandora's box. We can't get that box, so we leave. But the power of a loving man, men need to understand, and it goes back to that definition that we talked about, those 32 definitions of power, is how it affects the family. Not just the wife, but the kids. You can change a whole kid's aspect on their life by abandoning the family. That's something I think we need to talk about.
Would you say abandoning the family, meaning leaving the family?
I'm meaning that sometimes men leave the family, and it leaves the women to raise the home as the man and the woman. Yes.
Well, what do you think the reasons are that men leave the home?
I think it's a cycle.
Well, I think sometimes it could be selfishness. I'm just thinking personally. I never left the home, so I don't know. But I would say it's selfishness because, one, they did what they were supposed to do, and that's run away from an argument. But they never ran away from – but they ran away now from the problem. Because
I'd like to add one more thing to that, because I've seen this happen. Some men, this is what they're taught. Okay, there's no such thing as a commitment. All right, you know, I mean, this is brought to us by our wonderful welfare state, that you can't have welfare if the man's in the house. All right, and there are, you know, there's a whole generation of kids that are raised with no man in the house. And what they see all their uncles do is the same thing. They shack up with a girl, you know, punch out a few kids and move on. This is their paradigm. They've never seen a man stay in the home. And when they grow up, they emulate it.
Cycle, as I said. And it's easier said than done to break out of that cycle. You know, a lot of us on here had two parents. A lot of us didn't. And, you know, we can go, you know, we can go one way or the other with that situation. Like, you can try to be not like your father who rolled out or was a Rolling Stone or whatever the case may have been,
mm-hmm.
And just be the greatest father ever. You know, or like the brother said, you can emulate him because that's what, you know, that's what you've seen. You know, that's what you've witnessed firsthand. So if you roll out yourself, it's not even like some big deal because it's like my dad did it. And I came out, you know, I made out all right, you know. So the realization is that a lot of times when it comes to abandonment, we don't realize as men how that affects generations.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's not the fact that, okay, if you can't get along with your partner, that's fine. That's fine. But what does that your kids have to do with that?
Right.
And that's the problem I have with manhood, with some of these men. And I don't call them men. Is one, the ones that, okay, I'm mad at the wife, I'm out, but I'm not even going to see the kids because I just can't stand her. So I'm just going to roll out all and wipe out everybody in the family.
Yeah, but I mean, but how often? I mean,
and that happens more than that happens a lot.
Yeah, but also it also happens though. You got a bitter woman that's not allowing him to see the kids too. So I mean,
yeah.
You know, you got both sides of the coin with that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the problem.
You know, I mean, some men are just trifling, man. They lead a. I mean, that's trifling. I mean, it is. You know, what I mean, you and the wife not getting along. That's one thing, but the kids got nothing to do with that. You know what I'm saying? If you want to come back and still be in their lives, that's great. But if there's some defense, then, you know. And then you have some men that say, okay, well, I'm going to take you to court because I'm going to get my visitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do think that there are a lot of – I would like to believe that there's more men doing that than doing the other thing.
I would hope so because that's power of men. That's part of the power is even if you have negativity and defense blocking you for something that's yours, you know, the ones that give up, they allow the women to lead. I think we said it earlier. Is your wife the backbone or the face? And even if you're not together, you still should be the face of the family.
Yeah, me and my wife actually talked about that kind of recently. You know, and I don't know if we were watching a program on TV or just reflecting on what would happen if, you know, we were not to be together anymore for whatever reason. And, you know, we have two young daughters. And, you know, she looked at me and she said that you wouldn't let me, you know, raise our daughters and you just roll out. You know, she was like, you'd be fighting me tooth and nail, you know, to get joint custody or whatever the case may be. She said, you're not that type of guy just to, you know, you wouldn't just roll out on your daughters like that. And I was like, you're absolutely right. I'd be, you know, we'd be going at it, you know, for my visitation and my time, and I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't, you know, and that's just, again, it goes back to, you know, my childhood experiences, and I had both my parents there, and, you know, I have a relationship with my two daughters, and, you know, I wouldn't want to just give that up, you know, just because me and the wife didn't work it out. But, I mean, she said that, you know, she was like, you wouldn't just roll out, and I just raise these kids by myself, and you just send a check every month, and I said, you're absolutely right,
yeah.
You know.
Because, I mean, and I say this, not out of spite, but there's power in men because I know a couple of y'all on the phone had to take on responsibility of another man's baby. And I don't know if you've been through that situation where that man just doesn't do anything for their child. So you're 100%, that's your child. You don't even put step in the equation. You know, just because it wasn't your biological, you accepted that child as your child. And how does that feel? To take on that responsibility, if there's any men on the phone that's going through that right now.
Well, I don't think that it is. Well, let me just say this. It's a bigger challenge to do that than to actually be a biological, because you are dealing with, sometimes people deal with the actual biological, but then you're dealing with the child in the fact that you're not the biological.
Mm.
So who are you?
Right. It'd almost be easier if they were actually totally out of the picture than a little bit here and there in the picture.
Exactly. You know, so, and then you have to be delicate too, especially when you said that the biological may not be doing anything. So you step in and do your part. You have to be very, you got to be delicate, because you don't want to really say what you want to say.
Yeah, I understand. I have a good understanding,
you know,
of it.
You got to bite your tongue, and you got to just do for them. You know what I'm saying? And you can't just say, well, because that's just not cool. Because, you know, it's really not your place to talk about what the biological is doing is not doing.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you really get in a hole doing that.
Exactly, because then you look like, you know, someone that is just glory-seeking at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's
they're gonna figure it out anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you know, you fill in the void, whether you have the respect from them or not. There's still a need present, and you're still the head of this whole operation. So you have to step in and do your part, and then hopefully one day they will see that you are really on their team. You know.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, T Hawk. That's good words, by the way. That, I mean, you gotta own it. I mean, that's part of this, a package deal.
You gotta own it.
You can't be like, well, you know, I'm really into your mom, but I ain't really. I mean, it's like it's in all that baggage that comes with that. You know, you gotta mm-hmm. own it. You gotta own the absentee father, whether they're in their life or sporadically or never. I mean, you have to own all of that, and you know. I want to break this down really quickly. What's your topic tonight, Mr. Host?
The power of a loving man.
What is it again? One more time.
The power of a loving man.
And see, where that comes from, what the brothers were talking about, is that it comes from the power of the loving man upstairs.
Yep.
You know,
speak to it.
You know, for him to just, you know, just like you said, he said he's got to be delicate. He can't just come in and do the head of household thing and be like, yeah, I'm doing my thing. He got to, you know, his brother said he got to be delicate so he's not, you know, unfortunately, just raining on the other, you know, the biological's parade, because that's, you know, you're just doing your thing. You don't want to, you know, that's a touchy relationship, you know, there anyway. You don't want to do anything to squander that. So, but that comes from the power of the loving man.
Yeah.
You know, the big man upstairs. You know, that's what I thought about when I was hearing y'all say, I was like, the power, I'm looking at the topic on the screen, I'm like, the power of love. That's where that's rooted in. Because you wouldn't have that power.
No.
You know, you'd be, you know, like you say, glory seeking, like, yeah, you know, I'm way better than your biological father. He a punk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I believe you, because you rolled right in. Even though it's 11 o'clock, I was trying to get it in a little early.
No, we right on time, brother.
We right on time. I got to get this in before I hit the record button. No, we're going to the open mic. I hope y'all don't mind.
I got something for open mic, so yeah, get to it.
Because the thing I read and I believe, and I want all y'all to know, is the head of every man is Christ.
Yes.
In turn, the head of a woman is man.
Yes.
But only in the case if that two are married. And in turn, the head of Christ is God.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm wrong, somebody let me know.
Well, the only thing is, what if it's not a godly man?
There you go. Has no power, Brother Andrew.
He has no power. He may think he has power, but it's not real power.
It's
not real power. I mean, because when his reserve tank gets low, where's he going to go?
I'll tell you what, I had a buddy of mine a couple of years ago. I'd witnessed to him a lot, and he never would accept Christ. And his brother got killed, and he and his brother were just, I mean, super, super tight. And went over to see him and spend some time with him, and he was just, I mean, an absolute wreck. And I thought this was a good time to talk about, you know, Christ and all. And I said, well, where do you get your strength from? And he said, I get it from me. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
How empty is that? I mean, at the lowest point of your life, where do you go and all you got is you? That sucks.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to say something before I get down to this real gritty part and then we end the night, is that just because men are appointed by God to actually make family decisions, have that final say on something that they can't compromise with their wife on, it doesn't mean that they should exclude women from the decision-making process. Let's just make sure we're straight on that. That people understand that we're not female chauvinists or anything like that. We're just saying what we like,
right,
as men, and what makes a man more powerful if they do these things. On the contrary, we should, as men, consult women, just as the chairman of a board over a meeting consults with their board members, right? For women are the diplomats of the world. They advise the men and can change a man's decision without having any authority to change his decision. So we just want to make sure of that, because we all got to remember a woman will see fault in us. And they will see our faults in our decision making sometimes. And every time she says something, it goes back to that blunt that we talked about at the beginning, Rodney.
Yep.
It's because she cares about us. And that was the whole meaning of this whole thing tonight. A powerful man has a caring woman that will... I used to call them ride or die chicks when I was young. You used to hear songs from Even Thugs, Me and My B, or me, you know, that, you know, you always wanted that ghetto girl because you know she was going to ride or die with you.
Yep.
You know, if you in a fight, she in there fighting too. You know, that's the kind of woman you want. You want a woman that's going to be on your right-hand side, you know, one step behind you, but she going to protect the kids while you protect the family. And with that, we had a problem, and I think we had a problem that we all know about that has gotten us to this problem that we're still having today. And let's just be about it. I'm going all the way back to Adam and Eve. All right? I'm going back to Adam and Eve because the problem ended up happening is that Satan sold physical death to Eve on the grounds that God was a liar. Right? So she did what? She ate the fruit. But instead of, she thought it would increase her status in front of God by stepping in front of man. But the problem was that if she would have just consulted Adam, and Adam would have informed her straight up. Remember, one of our sayings was saying being honest and not trying to have us think of what you want, but just volunteer the information and tell us up front. Then there would be no one dying today. People wouldn't have any problems today. But
she was sneaking around.
What? That's right. So now we're talking about sex, and what is the power of sex? Who has the power when it comes to sex? We all know it's the women, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not always true.
Speak on it.
You know, there's some dudes withholding from their wives.
That
yep.
is true.
You know,
anybody on this phone, I hope.
Yeah. 25% of the men alive. 25. 75.
Yeah, I know some women that are being held out on, all pent up.
That's bad.
Yeah, you know, so it's not always, you know, now, you know, that's what you hear about, you know, but because, you know, women aren't generally out there talking about it like that, but there's a good chunk of men, you say 25%, that is causing the issue.
Yep.
That's a lot of men.
Now,
yeah,
I will tell
thing.
You one thing. When, you know, when women are younger, they're in control. You know, this stuff's lined with gold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You get to be 40 and you realize, you know what? You got the same thing everybody else got, honey. I think I'd be right, man. What? You know, I'm just telling you, you're 20, you can't buy a piece. You know, you get to be 40, you start doing some things, and especially you start succeeding in life, you got to beat them off with a stick. They'd be like, I ain't going to say nothing to her. You know, I'll be like, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm serious. I'm not lying, man. You know, the tables have turned.
Well, you got to go back to that power.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I'd tell you. I'd be like, you know what, it's not worth it to me. I've been down that road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going there. Well, nobody will know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the problem today is that we still are going through the exact same thing.
Huh?
We're still going through the exact same thing. We can't agree on sex. We can't agree on, you know, men today put women or their woman. You know, we're worrying about them being attractive before we're asking them to be before God.
Ooh, wow.
Right?
Well,
and majority of women today use, you know, they look at their status over love. I mean, you look at the basketball wives and the housewives of Atlanta, New York.
But that's not a real look at most godly women.
But that's most women, because what we call men, what men used to call women, gold diggers, right? Majority of women.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're. When I was single again at 40, my number one, you know, my number one on the list, they had to be a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they had to be a Christian. Now, I didn't want no brother monster.
No.
I didn't want to wake up and be scared out the bed. You know, I didn't want a beast from the east. But, I mean, number one, she had to be a Christian.
And I agree with that because, you know, I don't know if you were on at the beginning. One of the questions was asked was about your checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing Rodney said was his attractiveness to his wife, that he thought she was beautiful. But he never said anything about, she's a God-fearing woman.
And, you know, that was my mistake, because that's number one. I don't know how I missed that. I guess because I didn't write it down.
But yeah, I mean, but in that, and then I asked, it was that part of it. He said he didn't have a checklist. And I said, I had a checklist, and none of that was on my checklist. As a man and looking for my wife, God-fearing woman was not on the checklist.
Well, when I got married, you know, When I became a Christian, before I became a Christian, what, I didn't even have a list. I mean, if you were given it, I was taking it.
Mm-hmm. That's
that
exactly where I was.
Yeah. When I became a Christian, you know, and understood, because then I understood what God said, and I understood that this was it. There aren't many outs, and you know, we gotta be, you know, on the same page. You know, so you know, not having a Christian wife was not an option for me. Now, you know, hey, we all want the package. I mean, who wants a, you know, 800-pound beast, you know, scaring you out of bed? I'm kidding, you should or not. I mean, God made men, you know, to be visually, you know, attracted, you know, and I mean, I don't know if I could be married to a woman I wasn't physically attracted to. That doesn't mean anybody else had to be physically attracted to her, but if I am not physically attracted to her, I don't know if that spark would even start. I mean, that's being real. I mean, you know, some people say, well, all she got to be is a Christian. Well, I've seen some booger monsters up in the church. I'm talking about
that's true.
Gorilla
now,
monsters.
I mean, I think attractiveness was part of the package, but I think God also wanted somebody who, because we all know we have a jealous God, so.
But I mean, you know, I see some women the ugliest sin. I mean, I'm like, who the heck would want that? And they're carrying three little kids running behind them. I'm like, somebody.
Hey, listen.
Okay.
And they got more kids than anybody. You try, hold on, man. How did this girl get?
I don't know, man.
Who is hitting this?
guys.
But you know, but that goes back to what? That goes back to that devil, because you know that once you get that liquor up in you.
That's it. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's the last thing sitting at the end of the bar.
and it's Old Faithful at 4. If you want, you know, ain't nothing, you ain't going home with nothing tonight. It's an automatic call.
No, so I don't know. You know, I'm glad I ain't been in that situation. Tony, you should speak on this.
Okay. I mean, you know, we used to call them potato sacks.
Yeah.
No. I'm not talking about what they are. It's what you use.
Is that like the double bag method?
Yeah. Then, oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. Hey, but, you know, and sometimes you just got to take one for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all know about that.
Yep, we do.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
I'm going to leave this conversation before we go on.
I was talking to a woman. She said, no, women won't take one for the team.
Oh, yes,
no,
yes.
There's no wing woman. If you ugly and you just get nothing, you just sit over there on that couch over there by yourself.
That's right. She's like, no, oh, no way. I was like, really? The dudes be like, oh, hey.
But every man has been a wingman before.
That's right, man. I need you to take one for the team, you know. Hey, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, been there. Been a wingman many a day. Well, listen, I found some things out. I found out that experience turns into wisdom through accurate knowledge of God. And things can be overcome by flaws and basic instincts. Right? So there's a little mathematical term that bad instincts plus faith equals potential to be good. And step 2, bad instincts plus divine wisdom plus love plus experience is good. So you're going to have that package. You're going to have that bad negativity, you know, that bad luggage that your wife brings and you bring to the table. But if you add that with faith, you're going to have a good marriage. You know, a potential to be good marriage. If you have that, you bring in that negativity, that bad luggage and, you know, credit, abuse, bad marriage before or whatever, but you bring in that divine wisdom, the things that you learn from that bad instinct, the love that you two end up having with each other, and you bring in experiences and you take the positive out of each experience and you put that into your marriage and leave all the bad instincts behind, you'll have a good marriage. How's that sound for you, Andy?
All right, brother.
Well, go ahead.
I just want to speak to it just a little bit. And you're 1,000% correct. You do need the faith with those other things that you named. But I think that what's extremely important also that goes along with that is the works aspect in a marriage. Because there's a lot of faithful people that sit around and you know, and I think Andrews has spoken to this in the past where women say, yeah, they're, you know, God's going to send me a husband, you know, but they're not actively doing anything to obtain this husband. I think in a marriage, you have to actively do things to make each other happy and to make each other more interested. You have to actively work on a daily basis to go along with that faith to make sure that everything is A-OK, you know. And we can't wait for the other person to do it, or we can't sit back and keep going back in that box that's supposed to be tucked away. And I think that right there is a challenge all by itself, the power of forgiveness. You know what I'm saying? So that takes an act of works as well. So I think we have to add that into the equation when we talk about, you know, just, you know, having a lot of faith that our marriage is going to work.
Words, good words.
One other thing I want to piggyback on that, Tony. Too many people, I think that love is an emotion instead of an action.
Yeah.
And actions take work. There's days that you wake up and you don't feel like loving your wife, and she's probably pretty unlovable at some times. I'm not talking about your wife, Tony, but I'm just saying our wives.
Sure.
Okay? Because I know that I'm unlovable at times. Okay? And what if God only loved us when we were lovable?
Good words.
And I'm glad you said that because, again, that whole, and Patrice brought it up, that whole put it in the box and the whole one person being at forgiveness level one and the other person being at forgiveness level six, I think that thing needs to be put into that contract that you were talking about, Andrew,
mm-hmm.
The contract that you have. Is the whole forgiveness piece, you know? And when somebody says, okay, well, I have an issue with this whole forgiveness piece, then we have to talk about, well, aren't you going to ask for forgiveness at some point tomorrow? Aren't you going to ask for forgiveness for when you acted up and you had God, you know, you went in your prayer closet and said, please, Lord, forgive me? I mean, I think that we really need to get back to keeping those same standards when dealing with our spouses.
One of the things that has helped me tremendously in my marriage now is to realize that I dropped the ball, and I'm not perfect. And if I can't be perfect, how can I expect my wife to be?
Exactly. And then, I mean, honestly, it's a thin line between that and being judgmental. You see what I'm saying? Because if you can't forgive me, then some kind of way you're judging me for my actions.
That's right.
And you're not my judge.
And that will be, that is the death nail of a marriage, unforgiveness. And y'all that
Because we got to remember, the only judge and jury is God.
That's right.
Yeah, but y'all that have been divorced can probably trace it back to some form of unforgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Okay, and I'll tell you what, that's the root of it, because unforgiveness turns to anger, and anger turns to bitterness.
Yep.
And you can't have bitter water and sweet water in the same spring. And that bitterness flows into every part of your life if you hold on to that anger and that unforgiveness. And we have got to get to a point that we truly forgive. And true forgiveness is not bringing it back up 6 months later and throwing it in your face.
Hmm.
If you've forgiven, one of the things in our contract, it's no longer admissible evidence. You can't bring that up again. You have forgiven me. And until you start adhering by the rules, the conversation has to end. And we've agreed on this.
Mm-hmm. Words.
Good words, fellas. Good words, man. This has been a great call. But I want everybody just to remember this one question and take this home with you. And look and understand, and this will help out your relationship. And that question is the backbone of the family, are you the backbone of the family or the face? Are you the backbone of the family or are you the face? In closing, I told you that this was going to be a very difficult topic, but a very exciting topic, because it was hard to follow that Viagra one 2 weeks ago. That was a powerful one.
I'm still talking about that.
Yeah, but the topic this evening combined all of our prior calls, including last week. You know, we didn't get too much into it because we spent it on a lot of different things, but if you think about all of our calls that we've been on, including the Viagra one, the power is in the man to keep the relationship going. And I want to just thank everybody for listening to The Power of a Loving Man. And if any women are listening to this later on through the week, off our www.householdstress.com website, I guarantee you could take this back to your man and get a better, stronger feeling how your man is affected and how he feels about his relationship. With that being said, we're going to have another great call next Tuesday. Do we have a topic for next week?
Yeah, I'm up. I'm going to steal the baton. And next week, keeping up with the Joneses, bring your wallets, bring your credit cards, bring your credit scores. We're going to get into it, brothers. Keeping up with the Joneses.
Keeping up with the Joneses. Please go to www.householdstress.com. You can listen to all of our prior topics and also get prepared for what's coming up for next week. And again, we as the team of householdstress.com, we thank you for enjoying and coming up and listening to us and just being truthful in your talk to us on this conference call, because you made the conference call. Thank you again, and we are ending.
Going to open mic.